It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 62 degrees. Out at the airport, they are showing northwest winds to 14, gusting to 18, and they have 10 miles of visibility. A lot of folks down south would like to have that weather. Look for sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 71, west winds to 15, gusting to 25. Clear skies tonight with a low of 51, west winds to 15, gusting to 20. Increasing clouds for tomorrow with a high near 62, west winds to 5, becoming completely calm. And some scattered showers on Saturday, followed by a chance of rain. Partly sunny skies on Sunday. Coming up in the Midday Report, Brian Benoit gets a tour of the Kodiak Pacific Spaceport Complex. Secretary Buttigieg is in Alaska. He traveled to Haines yesterday. And the Brain Bus is traveling around rural Alaska. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The search continues this hour in Maui for victims of the largest U.S. wildfire in more than a century. The confirmed number of lives lost is now up to 111. This morning, officials identified three more deceased victims, all senior citizens from Lahaina. The governor of Hawaii, Josh Green, says large portions of the scorched town have yet to be searched. He projects the casualty figures will continue to climb. The ordeal Maui's residents are facing is all too familiar to those who survived the fire that devastated the California town of Paradise in 2018. 85 people lost their lives in the campfire. The disaster also destroyed 18,000 structures in Paradise. One survivor of that fire, Laura Nelson, describes what she learned in the aftermath of the campfire.
Imagine someone that you love and care about died. Times your whole community, you have to retreat. And that's something I do want to express to the people of Maui. You need deep rest.
President Biden is expected to visit Maui on Monday. COVID vaccines are deemed highly effective at reducing the risk that children will require urgent or emergency care for COVID-19. That is according to new data released today by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. NPR's Rob Stein has that story.
The CDC studied more than 90,000 children ages 6 months to 5 years between July 2022 and May 2023 and found that the kids who got 2 shots of the original vaccines followed by 1 bivalent booster were 80% less likely than unvaccinated kids to require urgent care or end up in the emergency room because of COVID. Kids who only got 1 or 2 of the original shots were far less protected. The CDC says the findings underscore the value of keeping kids up to date on their COVID vaccinations. Rob Stein, NPR News.
An entire city in Canada's Northwest Territories is being evacuated because of wildfires. NPR's Nathan Rott reports the fire is expected to reach Yellowknife, a territorial capital, by the weekend.
The National Weather Service says what is now Hurricane Hillary is expected to continue strengthening through the day. Forecasters expect the storm to weaken on Saturday or Sunday when it reaches colder waters off the Baja Peninsula, but they're still trying to get a better sense of the storm's path and potential strength as it moves north and towards more populated areas. Regardless, forecasters are warning that intense rainfall, wind, and waves are expected in Baja over the next couple days, and in Southern California, Nevada, and Arizona, Sunday and Monday. Nathan Rott, NPR News.
This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Kodiak Pacific Spaceport Complex on Narrow Cape, near the end of the island's road system, held an open house on Monday. It comes as Alaska Aerospace, which owns and operates the facility, is in the process of renewing its land use agreement for the complex. KMXT's Brian Benoit got a tour of the spaceport and has this report.
The lobby was packed with adults and kids waiting for van tours to see the spaceport's laboratories, mission control, and even the launch sites. Alaska Aerospace's interim CEO and president, John Kramer, was in a conference room near the entrance and held question and answer sessions for groups.
How many of you is this your first time coming to the spaceport?
A recent criticism of the company has been transparency. This is the first tour day at the Pacific Spaceport Complex since the pandemic, and Kramer says it's just the first step to improving communication with the public.
A couple of things. We're spending some money right now to purchase some reader boards. So these are the lighted signs that you see alongside the road. The ones that we have been using up until now, you had to manually adjust.
The goal with the new signs is to keep folks headed to the Pisagshack area updated on road and beach closures due to testing or launches at the facility. Kramer also plans to update their website as often as possible and send out closure announcements over the radio leading up to launches. The push for transparency also comes as the corporation seeks to renew its lease for the area. The agreement allows the company to use the area for rocket testing and launches. The current lease is set to expire next year, and Alaska Aerospace wants to renew it for another 3 decades. The existing agreement permits the company to have a bit over 3,700 acres of land for its core launch facility, and the renewal application outlines nearly the same footprint.
We're renewing the lease that we have and have had for the past 25, 30 years. So it's a renewal. The only real change, substance change that's in there is we're letting folks know that we have an interest in the old Loran site.
The old Loran site is a parcel of about 90 acres that the Coast Guard used for long-range navigation systems. The station is no longer in operation. But critics of the spaceport have claimed it's an attempt to control more than 7,000 acres in addition to their current facilities. Kramer says that land is also in the current lease as the complex's safety closure zone for launches.
We've always had the ability to shut down access on launch day more acreage than we usually do. We just haven't, because we haven't had a need to. That's not going to change. It's going to be the same.
The renewal application has plans for potential expansion, including new warehouses and more roads around the spaceport's current campus. One of the company's upcoming construction plans is to rebuild a launch pad that was damaged after an anomaly caused a rocket to crash land in January. The public can read over the application and send comments to the Alaska Department of Natural Resources by October 12. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
U.S. Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg traveled to Haines on Wednesday. He came to speak with town officials and residents and to see infrastructure projects that have been funded by the agency he leads. And as KHNS's Alan DePremenil reports, he also took a few minutes to chat with residents who came to protest the funding of a controversial dock renovation project.
Pete Buttigieg got a taste of the difficulties of traveling in Southeast Alaska during his last visit. He and U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski had intended to travel to Haines from Juneau using a regional airline company. The flight was canceled due to low cloud cover. So Buttigieg, Murkowski, and their staff hopped on a ferry and arrived in Haines a couple hours behind schedule. Buttigieg said the experience showed him how important the ferry system is for residents.
This experience really demonstrates, I think, the unique conditions that folks in rural Alaska live with every day. The kinds of road connections that you would take for granted in the lower 48 just aren't part of the story here. So it really points up the importance of making good use of the ferry dollars that we have.
Buttigieg and Murkowski spent some time at the ferry terminal speaking with workers there. They spoke of the jobs, the service to the communities.
With the testy, and she's 54 years old, which is a good life for any ship. Is it 59?
And the aging fleet.
She's an old.
She's mature.
About 25 residents met the delegation with protest signs. they came to oppose renovation plans for the Lutac dock. An arm of the Department of Transportation has agreed to fund the project. Protesters claimed the renovation would attract ore truck traffic that would drive through downtown Haines. They also say funding the dock would act as a subsidy to the Palmer Project, a mine prospect in the Chilkat Valley watershed they fear would destroy the valley's salmon runs. Resident Tom Ely summarized the situation.
Probably wonder why we're all here with our little signs.
I think
stuff,
I get the general idea.
Yeah. But we have some concerns about the infrastructure bill, that a lot of this money for Haines in particular is going to go to benefiting the mining industry, like putting a ore terminal where our salmon spawn right out the door here.
Buttigieg listened to the residents' concerns and went on to visit the dock in question with local officials. He asked what the dock renovation would enable that cannot already be accomplished by the current facilities. Officials said the current dock is decaying, and the barge must still use the far corner of the dock to tie up and use a new ramp. Haines Mayor Doug Olrud acknowledged residents' opposition to the project.
A lot of that came about because there's a group of mining executives from the Yukon attended a ports and harbors meeting telephonically, and they proposed bringing ore from the Yukon down.
Olrud said he doesn't think the miners' plan was feasible.
That would have required, at the low end, about 1,000 containers. And so we would need about 2 acres of storage just for those containers. And
so that's a pretty different scope than what you're talking about.
It's a pretty different scope than what we're looking at here. And even if those were stored off-site, to have trucks bringing those, even if it's a half mile down, I just think the cost of doing that is going to be prohibitive for anybody, and that it's going to be more likely that they're going to go to Stewart, B.C.
One of the highlights of the visit was seeing a hole in the ground. Sinkholes have developed on the dock. Borough officials say this shows the need to perform the dock renovations soon. When asked about the local opposition to the project, Buttigieg remembers his previous job.
Well, you know, I used to be a mayor. I have a lot of respect for those local processes and the fact that there are strongly held views about every project.
He says it is not his role to intervene in local politics.
We as the Department of Transportation aren't involved in discussions or debates about the future of mining, for example. Our focus really is on the quality of the infrastructure and the application that came in with regard to the plans for cargo. But, you know, as part of the permitting process, part of that is making sure that everybody's voices are heard. We're committed to that and also committed to making sure that we make the right kinds of investments to support the needs to this community.
The secretary and the senator went on to tour around Haines and meet with local tribal leaders. That meeting was not open to the press. In the afternoon, the sky had cleared and the visitors were able to catch a flight back to Juneau. Buttigieg said this may not be his last visit.
I'd love to come back with my family. It's such a just a remarkable place. So both professionally and personally, I feel like we've seen a lot and there's a lot more to see.
Plans for the Lutac dock have been approved. The borough hopes to complete the $25 million project by the end of 2024. For KHNS, I'm Alan DeBruneau.
An almost 60-year-old bus has begun traveling Alaska with an unexpected mission, supporting people with brain injuries in rural parts of the state. That bus visited Soldotna this week. KDLL's Riley Board has the story.
Dr. Adam Grove has two jobs, bus driver and naturopathic physician. He's got some part-time gigs too, like therapist, social worker, and confidant. Grove runs the Alaska Brain Bus, a traveling resource for people with traumatic brain injuries. The bus travels to road system parts of the state outside of Anchorage, where most brain injury medical resources are located.
So the goal is to get brain injury information out to communities and help communities build their own resources so they're not dependent on us or anybody else.
Alaska has the highest rate of brain injuries in the nation, and most of those incidents happen in rural parts of the state. The Kenai Peninsula, Grove says, has high rates within the state and a disproportionate number of vehicle collision-related brain injuries. Grove has been working as a physician for decades and became frustrated with the lack of resources outside of Alaska's largest city for brain injury survivors.
Most people don't know how to treat brain injury because people with brain injury, I mean, we're just weird. I'm a brain injury survivor myself, and it's like, we just have weird stuff going on. It's like, is it is it mental, like mental health issues, or is it physical health issues? And it's both. So most people aren't used to dealing with complicated situations like that. So there's very little, you know, sort of comprehensive care for that.
The bus itself is a 1967 Bluebird Wander Lodge with a deeply mid-century interior. It's got three different seating areas for consultations and an old-fashioned steering wheel that sits flat rather than upright. Grove says, according to documents, it may have been owned by 1964 presidential candidate Barry Goldwater. When the bus comes to town, the staff entertain both scheduled appointments and walk-ups. Grove spent Tuesday sitting down with Soldotna locals who are either looking for a brain injury diagnosis or already know that they have one and are seeking resources. He'll take patients through a list of questions to help them determine if they have a traumatic brain injury or maybe help someone find a good attorney for a workman's comp case.
It's not really medicine per se. When we're on the bus, there's a medical aspect to it, but a lot of it is social work, resource, navigation. It's kind of everything, because that's what brain injury, it needs all of those things.
Sometimes, he says, he's just a shoulder to cry on. Although Grove came alone to Soldotna this week, the bus has a larger staff, including doctors, therapists, social workers, and educators. The bus is funded by grants from the Alaska Mental Health Trust and supported by the Alaska Department of Public Health. Grove has been working on maintaining and setting up the bus for years. But for its maiden voyage, the Brain Bus visited the Soldotna Independent Living Center Tuesday. Maggie Winston, director of the center, says it's always trying to get resources to rural brain injury survivors in its role as an advocacy organization.
So it's really important that people get access to good resources, good care, and right away, since the brain is plastic and really your best chance for healing in during that time is getting the good connections right away.
She says the majority of the staff at the center have a disability, a federal requirement, so the center offers peer support to brain injury survivors as well.
So we have multiple staff that have traumatic and acquired brain injury. We have a full range of staff that have had lots of different disabilities. So really our role is being that peer support, being that information and referral, and being the bridge builders.
Next, the Brain Bus is headed to Homer, Seward, Delta Junction, and Fairbanks. Over the next year, Grove hopes to visit other Alaska communities, then return to Soldotna to check in on the people he consulted today. But he says there probably won't be any visits anywhere in the winter. The bus doesn't do well in snow. In Soldotna, I'm Riley Board.
Housing is a big concern for communities across Alaska. In Petersburg, the results of a community survey indicate that more than 300 houses may need to be built or renovated in the next decade. KFSK's Thomas Copeland has more.
Petersburg has a new fourth-grade teacher this fall, Sharon Paulson. She moved to town this summer. The floor of her home is strewn with musical instruments played proudly by five-year-old Glenn. In the middle, a steel drum marked with the first seven letters of the alphabet.
I'm sure the neighbors are thrilled.
I don't think we'll be that in the way, see?
Paulson signed her contract in March. She broke the news to her husband and her son and started house hunting in Petersburg.
We looked on Zillow, which was laughable, and someone said, check on Facebook, and I saw that there really wasn't very much there. I looked with the realtor companies, both of them. The administrators were putting the word out for people. We had a list of Airbnbs to ask if maybe they would rent to us.
After nearly 2 months of searching, Paulson spotted a classified ad in the local paper.
That was the last kind of hope that I had. It really was like, if we can't find housing, we can't make this move. So when we finally did find a house and our offer was accepted, I could visibly see the stress fall off of my husband's face.
Stories like hers are common around Petersburg. So last fall, the Borough Assembly set up a housing task force. Assembly member Dave Kensinger is the chair.
Well, I think we need to figure out a way to start building more housing. It's pretty simple. If we don't deal with it, we won't have as many people in town.
But Kensinger says that's the easy bit. The hard part, what type of housing and how much of it? To answer that, the task force launched a community housing needs survey. It ran for a month in the summer, and it was all overseen by Anchorage-based Agnew Beck Consulting. Now, the results are in. Here's Katie Skovic, senior manager at Agnew Beck.
We had 366 responses to the community housing survey in Petersburg, which is awesome. That's about 10% of the population and a really great rate for this kind of survey.
The survey was 10 pages long with 39 questions, but here are some of the headline results. A quarter of respondents aren't happy with their housing, and most of those who aren't happy are under 45, working and still renting. Most of them want to move into family homes, but apartments and duplexes are popular too. 80% of all respondents want to see more land with utilities opened up for housing. And the survey shows that a lack of skilled labour and the cost of repair is holding people back from renovating their homes. But Skovic says that even those who don't fall under any of those categories still care about this issue.
The majority of Petersburg residents are satisfied with their own housing, but also the majority of residents say that housing is a community issue. And so to see both of those things at the same time is encouraging.
Now, the team at Agnew Beck have been sifting through all that data to calculate what housing they think Petersburg needs.
According to our housing need forecasts, over the next 10 years, there's a need for roughly 316 housing units in Petersburg. We're really looking at about 6 new units a year and 18 rehab or renovation units each year for the next 10 years.
So once the consultants submit their final report at the end of September, Dave Kensinger says there's no time to waste.
The time to done something was 10 years ago. And if we want to keep a vibrant community and we just don't want a community of a bunch of retirees, we need to address the housing problem now, not next year.
But that's easier said than done. Between land, labor, and logistics, and many folks in Petersburg will have big concerns that need to be addressed first. Back at the Paulson family home, Sharon has shifted her focus to a different challenge altogether. The first day of school.
I'm very excited, you know, of course nervous. I rarely ever sleep the day before students come to school.
Do you have a lesson plan for day one?
Oh, not yet. I don't yet, but I will.
Perhaps she can whip up a quick housing plan while she's at it. In Petersburg, I'm Thomas Copeland.
The nation's largest retailer is doing quite well. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. Walmart earned nearly $8 billion in profit in its second quarter as Americans increasingly turned to the low-cost retailer for deals. Sales were up 6% to more than $160 billion. Groceries and other non-discretionary items made up more than half of those sales. The Conference Board's leading economic index deteriorated for the 16th consecutive month in July. The index tracks future economic conditions. The think tank is now forecasting a mild recession starting at the end of the year. Initial claims for jobless benefits remained low last week, totaling 239,000. That's a bit less than the week prior. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 17th day of August, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 6:38. It will set again at 9:47. That will give us 15 hours and 10 minutes of glorious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 42 seconds compared to yesterday. A record low temperature for this date was 41 degrees, set in 1970 and 2018, and a record high was 80 degrees, set in 2019. Currently 62 degrees. It's a nice day. Wind speeds of northwest 14 and gusting to 18 at the airport right now. 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon with a high of 71, west winds to 15, gusting to 25. Clear skies overnight too with a low of 51, west winds to 15, gusting to 20. Increasing clouds for tomorrow with a high near 62, west winds continuing but going down to 5 and finally becoming completely calm in the morning. Look for scattered showers for Saturday, or Friday night and Saturday. Partly sunny skies on Sunday. Let's check with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 32, date issued 10 a.m. on August 17th. There will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Friday, August 18th to 6 p.m. Saturday, August 19th in the following areas: in the outer Katoy Bay section of the Fog Neck District and the inner Karluk section of the southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters will be the normal closed waters as described in regulation in the inner Karluk section. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Friday, August 18th to 6 p.m. Sunday, August 20th in the following areas: in the Iziut Bay section south of a line from Haystack Rock to Pillar Cape. And there will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 6 p.m. Friday, August 18th to 6 p.m. Sunday, August 20th in the following areas: in the Duck Bay section and the Iziut Bay section north of a line from Haystack Rock to Pillar Cape. The following areas will be extended from 6 p.m. Saturday, August 19th until further notice: the outer Iakulik, outer Karluk, Sturgeon, and Halibut Bay sections of the southwest Kodiak District and the northwest Kodiak District, except for the Uyak Bay and inner Uganic Bay sections, will remain closed. As previously announced, there will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Thursday, August 17th to 6 p.m. Saturday, August 19th in the following areas: in the southeast of Fog Neck, Paul's Bay, Paranosa Bay, and Chuyak Island sections of the Fog Neck District; in the Cape Alatak, Humpy Deadman, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District and the Mainland District. There will be a 72-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 16th until 6 p.m. Saturday, August 19th in the following areas: in the southwest of Fog Neck, northwest of Fog Neck, Raspberry Strait, and northeast of Fog Neck sections of the Fog Neck District, the northeast Kodiak District, and the east side Kodiak District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the southwest of Fog Neck section of the Fog Neck District within one-half nautical mile of a beach near the stream terminus of Molina Creek, stream number 252105, between 58 degrees 10 north latitude and 58 degrees 11 north latitude. Cost recovery fisheries began in Katoy Bay Special Harvest Area on August 5th, and fishing opportunities in the Duck Bay, Iziut Bay, Inner Katoy Bay, and Outer Katoy Bay sections will depend on the ability of the Regional Aquaculture Association to meet cost recovery needs, and all cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. Until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak district south of a latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length, may not be retained by purse and gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory through tonight. West winds at 25 knots for today and tonight. 7-foot seas are expected to come down to 5 feet tonight. And for tomorrow, southwest 20, seas to 5 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tonight there. West winds to 30 knots today, seas to 6 feet. West 25 tonight, seas to 5 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, southwest 20 and seas to 4 feet. Looking at our local tides, we have an incoming tide. Our next high tide will be at 3:58 p.m., call it 4 o'clock here on the east side. That will be a 7.4-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:29 this evening of 1.8 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 4:20 p.m. and be 13 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:15 p.m. of 2.4 feet in Larsen Bay. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a meeting tonight. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. It will also be broadcast right here on KMXT on 100.1 FM. And you can check in on the Kodiak Island Borough's YouTube channel for a live stream as well. The Board of Education will be having a regular meeting next Monday, August 21st. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, which is F-140 of the old high school wing. And do you have a favorite souvenir from a Kodiak event? Or have you ever found a cool object while hiking or beachcombing? Come share your stories about these experiences and more with the Kodiak History Museum at their focus group event this Saturday from 1 to 2:30 p.m. The experiences and stories that you share will be used in our upcoming temporary exhibit, Objects Uncovered. Objects Uncovered will explore objects from the Kodiak History Museum's collection with the perspectives of Kodiak community members through the stories shared at the focus group. Again, that is at the Kodiak History Museum this Saturday from 1 to 2:30 p.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.